Hello and welcome to Our American States, a podcast from the National Conference of State Legislatures. I'm your host, Ed Smith.
Remote work remains a very viable option for most employers, especially the hybrid arrangements where you're working sometime at home and sometime in the office.
That was Charlie Kearns, an expert in tax law and a partner at Evershed Sutherland in Washington, D.C. He's also an expert on the tax ramifications of remote work and my guest on the podcast. Kearns worked on the recent NCSL publication, State and Local Tax Considerations of Remote Work Arrangements, issued by the Remote Work Taxation Workgroup. The popularity of remote work soared during the pandemic, but only for those in some jobs, particularly tech-focused or computer-based jobs. While exact figures are not available, some estimates are that more than 25% of the workforce is still working remotely or in a hybrid arrangement. That's a decline from the pandemic, but still a significant portion of the workforce. Charlie explained the myriad tax ramifications for states when it comes to remote workers. He also discussed how state tax systems are starting to respond. Also on the show is James Privett, until recently a legislative specialist in NCSL's Washington, D.C. office. He discussed steps states are taking to respond to this changing tax environment and also discussed how lawmakers and legislative staff can learn more about the issue. Here's our discussion, starting with Charlie Kearns. Charlie, welcome to the podcast.
Great. Thanks. It's great to be here.
Well, this subject of remote work is something that I think everybody has been fascinated with, something that most of us weren't too aware of before the pandemic. You, however, are very steeped in this, so we're really interested in finding out what the scale of remote work is in the country now. We know, of course, that a lot of people ended up working remotely during the pandemic, but it seems to have been almost company by company and organization by organization coming back into it. So what's the status quo now?
You've kind of hit the nail a little bit on the head. I mean, remote work has ebbed a little bit since the pandemic, but it's still very popular. You see this in a lot of the studies that have come out over the last couple of years, but also from my personal experience in advising clients. Remote work remains a very viable option for most employers, especially the hybrid arrangements where you're working sometime at home and sometime in the office. Those seem to be the most popular type. Because of that arrangement where you're potentially working in two jurisdictions, remote work is by definition where you're working in one jurisdiction at home, but the employer's office may be in another jurisdiction, whether that be a state or a locality. It's those hybrid arrangements, where it's half in one jurisdiction, half in another, a little bit more, a little bit less, that creates the more complex state and local tax issues, because you're dividing up the time spent in each jurisdiction as opposed to full-time remote or full-time in office, which are not easy by any stretch, but they raise less complicated issues than the multi-jurisdictional work.
So at least for some employees and employers, this has really been more of a permanent shift, even if it's a hybrid arrangement, but a hybrid arrangement that didn't exist prior to the pandemic.
That's right. That's been my experience so far.
So this report from NCSL, which you were involved in and we linked to in our show notes, points out that states have a lot at stake here because of the myriad tax issues involved. And I wonder if you could give listeners kind of an overview of what those tax issues are.
You might expect this or might not, kind of depending on your level of experience with state taxes, but remote work touches on most of the common tax types within the U.S. at the subnational level or state or local level. So obviously, remote work can impact employer withholding, unemployment insurance taxes, and other employment-related taxes like paid leave contributions. And related to withholding, because it's tied to the employee's earning of wages, the employee may have new or complex personal income tax obligations that they would have to file on the individual level. I think we'll talk about this a little bit later, but as a general overview, having an employee in a state can also trigger a number of business level taxes, especially if the employer did not have any presence in that state before the remote work began. I mean, and one final point that is a more complicated issue in a sense from a policy perspective is what to do about credits and incentives. Remote work can have a fairly significant effect on jobs-based credits and incentives. So for example, A lot of states tie availability of a credit to the creation of name the number of jobs within the state, but also maintaining those jobs within the state for a number of years. And so, you know, you may have initially qualified for a credit before the pandemic because everybody was on site, but now you have maybe half of those jobs are working remotely in another state. Obviously, it depends on the area of the country you're in and the company's policy, but now you have a number of those employees outside the original jurisdiction. And so the question is, does that employer still qualify for the credit? The answer is it depends. Like many of the other state tax issues we have to deal with, you have to look closely at the given state law and so forth. And of course, this could also apply on an intrastate level within the state if there are certain specified designated zones that provide employers certain credits and incentives.
Well, I guess to state the obvious, our tax system was developed when people were working in the same state as their company, they're physically working in the office, and so on and so forth. Is that really the core of the disruption that's caused by remote work, this shift?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Some areas of the country have more experience dealing with multi-state remote work, as it's been going on for some time. Of course, you see more of it now, but areas of the country like the Northeast in particular, the Mid-Atlantic, where states are compact and close together, have dealt with some of these issues for a while, as opposed to maybe the Midwest or even the Western states, where you have quite a bit of distance in some cases between large metropolitan areas and other areas. But, you know, we've seen this core issue, as you call it, really come to the forefront the last couple of years.
Well, as somebody who grew up in the East and now lives in the West, I can certainly appreciate how different the geography might affect that. To put it mildly, after reading the white paper, it's complicated. And I wonder if maybe we could start with the employee and personal income tax. And I guess my question, and maybe tell me if it's the right question, how do states avoid double taxing people who work in one state, but their employer is based in another state?
Yeah, this is sort of a threshold issue in my mind for a lot of the subsequent policy decisions that come about through remote work. Most commonly, the employee's home state provides a credit for taxes paid to the work state or the other state where the employer is located. So this is, you know, the general approach that states have taken since income tax has been around, really. And this is a pretty good system, but complications can and have arisen, in particular when local taxes are involved. So there have been lawsuits that deal with when and how local tax paid can be credited against the state tax and vice versa. And so you have some of those nuances that come about, but overall the approach to having a credit for taxes paid against the resident state's tax liability is the usual approach. Another common approach, which I frankly like quite a bit from a tax compliance perspective, to avoiding double taxation is the adoption of reciprocity agreements between the states. These agreements allow employees to pay income tax to their home state rather than the employer state. There have been, you know, some famous disputes, I guess, between certain of the states of whether or not they're going to continue the reciprocity agreements. For example, there's a reciprocity agreement between New Jersey and Pennsylvania that's still in place, but there was some concern some years ago about it continuing. Wisconsin and Minnesota have discontinued their reciprocity agreement probably about a decade ago, if not a little bit more. But there's been some discussion about reinstituting that in light of remote work. And a number of other states have these agreements that allow the simplification of the tax filing and tax payment responsibility and limiting it to the home state of the employee.
Another area is employers' general business taxes, and maybe you can take a moment to explain what those are for those of us not that conversant with it. How is that affected by having remote employees?
So business taxes in general are those that are imposed on at the business entity level as opposed to the employee or personal level. And they could be kind of indirect taxes like sales and use taxes that are in most cases imposed on the purchaser of an item. But the business is effectively the taxpayer because they're required to collect it. So you have corporate income taxes, sales and use taxes, local gross receipts taxes, and even some local business personal property taxes where you have desks and computers and so forth within a jurisdiction. So it really runs the gamut of the tax types throughout the U.S. And this is really because remote work under common arrangements, like the hybrid arrangement that we discussed earlier, involves a regular presence of an employee in a state so that the employer is usually deemed to be doing business in the state because that employee is performing services for that business in the jurisdiction. And as you certainly stated correctly, filing and paying taxes in a bunch of states is time consuming and very expensive, especially for smaller employers that, you know, maybe prior to remote work were only doing business in one state. Now, all of a sudden, they may be doing business in 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 states. As we get used to remote work and it becoming the new normal, as we said, over a couple of years now, whether and when and how to allow remote work is one of those decisions businesses will need to make in order to retain the best talent. And that's what we're seeing a lot of companies struggle with now.
Well, I have 3 adult children. All 3 of them work remotely. All 3 of them work for companies that are in states other than where they live. So I just on that basic family sample, it does sound like adjusting tax enforcement for remote work is got to put quite a burden on state employees who do that work. And I wonder if you've seen any evidence that the situation is causing states problems in being able to enforce tax rules, collect what's due, and maybe have enough skilled employees who are able to do that.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. Having an influx of remote workers into a state can create staffing issues and compliance issues. Usually the audit cycles take a little bit of time to develop. Over 3 or 4 years since the event happened. So we're still kind of waiting for a lot of those, but expect that to kind of mature over the next couple of years. Some of the enforcement issues could arise as well when tax policy has questionable legal grounds. For example, there's a handful of states that adopt a policy where a remote worker is deemed to be earning wages at the employer's location, even when physically working at home. And this policy, which we discussed in the paper, is controversial and is usually adopted at the administrative level and not the legislative level. It's called the convenience of the employer test. It's a little bit of a misnomer, but that's the nomenclature we use in the tax world. And so most of these cases that we're seeing that are in courts now have been brought by the individual employees. But the policy can also impact states where the employee lives because of that credit for taxes paid. So the states are put into a position where because another state adopted the so-called convenience test, they now have to decide whether to provide their residents who are remotely working a credit for taxes paid to the quote convenience test state or double tax a residents. Usually they provide a credit to their residents for taxes paid to the other state, which, you know, impacts the treasury quite a bit because, you know, you're losing tax revenue. The cases that we're seeing, there's a handful of them, Missouri, in particular related to St. Louis, a number of Ohio local cases, and a number of New York cases that deal with the New York state policy, which is a permanent policy that has been around for decades. Now, I'll mention the St. Louis and Ohio City cases, those were kind of temporary policies that came about because of the pandemic and the factual circumstances surrounding what do employers do, what do employees do when, you know, this remote work phenomenon happened and nobody knew how long it was going to last. We have to wait and see how these enforcement issues will play out as some of them move through the courts and some are just kind of at the audit level. But because the cases involve constitutional issues frequently, because you're involving people in multiple states, businesses in multiple states, one of them may end up at the Supreme Court. So it's something to keep an eye on over the next several years. These things do take a lot of time. And we discuss some of the cases and where they are in more detail in the white paper. So it's worth a quick read if you're really interested in that kind of thing.
Well, Charlie, another question I want to ask you is about the disruption that remote work can cause in communities where people are moving. I've seen this effect where I live in Colorado because so many of the mountain towns are desirable places to live, but we're facing really severe housing shortages before the pandemic. And now in some places, the people who actually do the work and run the restaurants and the other shops can barely afford to live. And I'm wondering what, if anything, legislatures can do to address that problem.
Sure. You know, we've seen a couple creative approaches over the last several years, and even before that, because this is, you know, affordability and housing has a direct impact on tax issues, especially property tax issues, right? So historically, there have been tax policies that involve what have been, you know, been called property tax circuit breakers that either provide a credit or limit the amount of property taxes that can be owed due to a rapid increase in the value of a home. And so, you know, there have been a number of approaches under the circuit breaker type of policy that have been adopted to, you know, protect longtime residents and particularly seniors from rapidly increases home value. So that's one thing to think about. Another interesting approach that we've seen, particularly in some larger cities, is providing tax incentives to convert vacant or underused office buildings to affordable housing, to apartments and so forth. We've seen some here in the district, and I know other cities have talked about that as well. I think from an overall basis, these are very important policy issues that policymakers, both at the state and local levels, have to really consider. I think one thing I would note from a tax attorney perspective, whatever the potential solution is, policymakers should have legislative counsel review the proposals and ensure that they pass muster under the U.S. Constitution. These are all very complicated issues that, no matter the good intent of the proposal, may give rise to particular clauses under the Constitution, namely the Commerce Clause, the Equal Protection Clause, and the Privileges and Immunities Clauses, which directly relate to multi-state business and multi-state remote work.
Well, it does sound like this is a watch this space kind of situation, that this is going to be cooking for quite a while. And I wonder, as we wrap up, just generally, what sort of steps, other steps you see states taking trying to deal with this really very challenging situation, which they did not have a huge amount of experience with before?
I would really like to see more simplification and uniformity achieved through cooperation among the states and the business community in particular, by entities like NCSL and others that are really taking the lead on developing best practices and so forth to address these complicated issues. We've seen some good examples with the reciprocity agreements that we talked about earlier, where states work together to solve these compliance problems. But also in the unemployment insurance space, there are rules for assigning wages to a given state that are uniform, that have been around since the 1940s, called the localization of service rules, that are much simpler to apply in most cases than, say, non-resident withholding or personal income tax rules that are all over the place, really, from a policy perspective. And then more recently, the adoption by several states of bright line non-resident withholding thresholds that ease compliance burdens for traveling employees, which may include remote workers who want to go, you know, work at their vacation home or a family member's house for several weeks at a time, which provides a little bit of overlap and protection there. And we discussed some of those solutions in the white paper as well.
Well, it certainly sounds like an extraordinary complicated situation, and I appreciate you explaining it to those of us who are not tax lawyers. So well done. Thank you very much, Charlie, and take care.
All right. Thank you very much.
I'll be right back after this with James Privett from NCSL.
Rely on State Legislatures News on the NCSL website for the freshest takes on people, places, and policy. Find out what states are doing, about the biggest issues of the day, and check out the Across the Aisle and My District features for compelling stories of bipartisanship and special places and events. Make SLN your daily go-to for all the hottest legislative topics and trends. Just click on the News tab on the NCSL website, www.ncsl.org.
James, glad to have you on the podcast.
Thanks, Ed. Really appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
So I was talking with Charlie Kearns earlier in this podcast about some of the state tax ramifications of remote work. You work in the NCSL DC office, and I know you keep track of this, and I'm wondering if you could sketch out what types of steps states are taking in this area and really if they're doing much work at all.
In my opinion, I think a lot of states could do a little bit better job as far as like working with each other. It's a lot of reactionary policy, especially done through the courts. like we've already seen, the pandemic was really the turning point to really see that there was a need to address this issue. I mean, we had remote workers prior to the pandemic, but now it's almost a requirement of the working force. You know, you have more people that want to be remote workers. And so there's just more interest from legislators to really try to find a way to tackle this type of issue. So starting with the courts, I mean, we have, the conversations that we have in New York with the rulings with the surrounding areas, because obviously New York is doing stuff. And so you have reciprocating legislation in that region, but not too much else around the country.
Are there any approaches that states seem to favor at all for in what action they have taken, any kind of trends?
From what we saw, we pulled a couple of bits of legislation that may be introduced in this upcoming cycle. I mean, it seems like Georgia has a HB 263 that is trying to address these type of issues. Of course, with the political landscape and everything, just to even start these conversations and really start to educate legislators on the issues, on the different aspects of it. I think that's where we really are right now, is really in the education stage of policymaking.
Now, I understand one thing some states have tried to do is just streamline the process for employers to make it a little easier for them to say, yes, my employees are giving complete information on their withholding. And is that a trend? Is that anything that's going on in a lot of states?
Well, I believe so, because, I mean, a lot of states have incentive to do so, because, a lot of times they lost revenue during the pandemic, especially after all that COVID money, COVID-19 money that came from the federal government. They're no longer going to have access to that. And so, states like the Utahs and Wyomings and those in the middle of America are going to encourage, remote workers, especially high paying remote workers, to, add to the revenue stream for the states and these state coffers. So, I mean, there's a lot of incentive to encourage that.
So it does sound like it's sort of a watch this space situation. There's going to be a lot more stuff coming down the line. What can NCSL do to help legislators and staff to better understand some of this material? We'll, of course, link to that new report, but anything else that they can do to help bring themselves up to speed on this?
Listen to this podcast here. I mean, Charlie Kearns is honestly one of the foremost experts, we believe, in this space. And even the working group that included both legislators and the private sector in this space. And we did a webinar earlier in October 2023 that included some other tax professionals alongside with Charlie Kearns. Charlie Kearns actually moderated that panel. We'll be able to, and it's available through NCSL to allow, be able to talk through these spaces as well. And also just wanted to add to your previous question of, yes, it's great for states that are encouraging remote workers to come in, but there's also a kind of a detriment for those states that are losing remote workers, California, New York. I live in Washington, D.C. We see a lot of the city itself losing a lot of revenue because, the offices are empty now. So now you have commercial real estate dealing with that if you have more remote workers in your state. So I think it's really going to be touching a lot of different components in the fiscal space as well.
James, thanks so much. We will, of course, link to the webinar. We'll link to the report. And if we come up with any other materials, we'll put those in there too. James, thanks very much. Take care.
Thanks, Ed.
I've been talking with tax attorney Charlie Kearns and James Privett from NCSL about how the shift to remote work has affected states and their tax collection process. Thanks for listening. You can check out all the podcasts from the National Conference of State Legislatures by searching for NCSL Podcasts wherever you get your podcasts. This podcast, Our American States, dives into some of the most challenging public policy issues facing legislators. On Across the Aisle, host Kelly Griffin tells stories of bipartisanship. Also, check out our special series, Building Democracy, on the history of legislatures.